So today's section of the Path of Perfection is Chapter 4, Moderation in Yoga. So we can discuss a little bit about why we have to do yoga, what yoga is, where yoga takes us, and I will try and fit in an IT example as Praveen suggested, because actually sparks something that does come into mind, that's something that we can use to understand why we're in this material world and actually how fleeting and temporary this material world is. So before we start, I'll chant a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, the sixth chapter. The sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is called Dhyana Yoga. And it's Lord Krishna is giving us a process by which we can actually perform yoga, how we should sit, how we should meditate, even how we should eat, how we should work, how we should perform recreation, how much we should sleep. So Lord Krishna is giving us advice on that so that we can practice the proper yoga system. So the verse is Samam Kaya Shiro Grivyam Tarayan Achalam Stira Sampriksha Nasikagram Svam Dishashchana Valokayam Prashantatma Vigrata Bir Brahmachari Vrate Stita Manasam Yamyamachchito Yukta Asita Matpara. One should hold one's body, neck and head erect in a straight line and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. So Lord Krishna is giving us instruction of how we should meditate on him within the heart. Krishna is within our hearts. We come to the temple and we see the Lord Krishna, Srimati Radharani, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. We see the Murti in front of us and we take darshan of the Murti. And we pray to the Murti and we ask for whatever it is we ask for, some blessings, perhaps some material benedictions, hopefully more spiritual blessings and benedictions from the Lord. And we come here regularly because we realized, as devotees of Krishna, we are all realizing that we need Lord Krishna in our life in some way, shape or form. And to the degree that we take shelter of that, then to that degree we become a devotee of Lord Krishna. So why does this material world exist, and what is this material world, and why are we here? These are basic fundamental questions that we ask ourselves from time to time, and especially when everything's going wrong in our life. Has anybody ever experienced when things are going wrong in their life? Hands up. I think there's more of you than that. Everybody, actually this is designed for that. The world is designed for suffering. And because we are here, because we are, this is a statement of independence. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Sisi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Shishi Gonitai Ki Jai. Lord Krishna has kindly created this world for us, for people like us who actually, we want to become like Krishna. It's very difficult to understand that because we're not aware of that, but our physical body, our body that we have, the desires that we carry, the relationships that we have, if we just spend a little time just to analyze where we are, what we're doing, and just a little introspection, we actually come to the conclusion that we want to be the enjoyer. We think we're doing everything, and we want to enjoy everything around us, either directly or indirectly. Perhaps if we want somebody else to enjoy, but because we get enjoyment from them enjoying, especially family members, then that is also, because they're an extension of us, then that is also what we call extended enjoyment or extended selfishness. We are all selfish. And there's nothing wrong in admitting that. Out there in the material world, in our work situation, the corporate world or in the materialistic world, there's nothing wrong with being selfish. It's encouraged. It's encouraged to be selfish. It's encouraged to succeed ahead of the next door neighbor, ahead of your colleagues. Keep your colleagues down so you can promote yourself and climb to the top of the corporate ladder and take the position of a managing director or director of some sort. So we have that inbred in us that we should squash the enemy, the opposition. Not everywhere. Obviously, we're all sitting here. We have slightly different consciousness, which is why we're all sitting here today, because we want to acknowledge Krishna as the enjoyer. So this is going on in the material world like that, and actually everything is being exploited. We are exploiting, and people are exploiting us. In the spiritual world, this is completely opposite. Everything is centered around the Krishna's pleasure. And we are satisfied, completely ecstatic and satisfied with being an instrument of Krishna. If I was to sit here and think to myself, I'm talking and I'm speaking and I'm addressing you and I'm instructing you and I'm looking like this and I'm on a higher seat, I've completely misunderstood the purpose of spiritual life. Because spiritual life is about being an instrument of the Lord. It's not about enjoying. It's not about fulfilling our envy and material desires and motivations. Shishirada Gokulananda ki jai. So in our original position, we have no ego. We have no false ego. We have no identity of I, me, or mine. Because we don't have an identity of I, me, and mine, we don't have this conception that I want to enjoy, or I am doing this, or I am doing that. If we practice spiritual life very seriously, not religious life, but spiritual life, and we make the connection that we don't belong in this world, to the degree that we make that connection, act on that platform of actually the soul, then we'll understand, actually Krishna is doing everything through us. Krishna is enjoying through us now, and Krishna is doing everything through us now, either directly or indirectly through material nature. The analogy is that when a young boy, and he wants to lift up a barbell, weights, heavy weights beyond what he can lift, and the father's looking over him, and he picks those weights up, but what the father's doing is actually picking up for him, but the boy thinks he's picking them up, you know, it feels light. That is what is actually happening. So that is how material nature is operating. Material nature is doing everything, and we are just observing. We think we're doing it because we have a false ego. I am the enjoyer. This is mine. This is not mine. I like this. I don't like that. We are always accepting. We're always rejecting something or another. And this is basically our disease. If you just look around us and we think, how many times in a day I think, I've got to get up. I need to have a shower. I need to feed my kids. I need to go to work to get my money. I need to eat. Now I'm hungry. Oh, constantly, this is the nature of the material existence. Is that separate? It's called a separatist existence from Krishna. So this is our disease. We've forgotten our connection with Krishna. As a result, we think we are the center of the universe. You know, you get stuck in a traffic jam. You just need to realize, I need to be here. I'm impatient. Anger. And all the time situations come up. And somebody upsets us on the road and cuts us up in a car. And we become angry at them. Who are you? This is me. I'm driving my car. And you nearly crashed my car into my car. You know, everything's me and mine. It's natural. It's a natural material condition. So this is what we created. We chose to leave the association of Krishna. We chose to say, actually, let me see what it's like to be to be the enjoyer. Let me see what it's like to be the position of Krishna. So we're infinitesimally small. So Krishna says, okay, I'll give you a little playground called the material world, and here's some toys, and you can play, and you can just get that sense of feeling that what it's like to be the center of the world, the center of the universe. Some people really, really obviously to be the center. You take Gordon Brown, somebody like that, very powerful political figure, running the country. It's impossible not to have a sense of I'm doing this and I'm enjoying this or I'm suffering that. It's impossible because he has so much power. The more power we have, the more we become intoxicated with that. So we have a little glimpse of what it's like to be God, but we don't have all of the powers that God has. We are infinitesimal, and Lord is infinite. So when he gives us the control, he also gives us he's not really giving us control. He's just giving us illusion that we're in control. He's not really giving us control of anything, because he comes with us. He's in our hearts, which is why the verses that we meditate on the Lord in the heart, because we have to realize that Krishna is constantly with us. Krishna is constantly advising us. He's constantly instructing us. We don't realize it. We call it conscience. We call it many things. So Krishna is actually created a playground, and he's given us an illusion to think we're in control. When that illusion starts becoming dismantled is when we start suffering. We see things going wrong. Then we know we're not in control. And for a brief second, we can see, actually, I'm not in control of anything. There's something beyond all of this. And then our ego starts to become a little bit down and subdued, and we become a little bit humble. And when we become a little bit humble, then we are open to spirituality, we are open to knowledge, we are open to something greater than this. And that's a privilege. So I'm not saying we should pray for suffering, but when we feel misery and reverses in life, it's a blessing. It's a blessing from Krishna. Much more than when he gives us enjoyment. Because it allows us to open our hearts. We can do one of two things. We can become angry and we can say, I don't believe in God. I hate God, and we become an atheist. You meet atheists. And atheists are bitter because they didn't get what they wanted. And they're not willing to accept that God is in control. We're devotees. When we get suffering, the first thing we come to do is come to the temple and we say to Krishna, please help me. And we see the devotees and we seek spiritual advice. That is a blessing, because in this day and age where the movement of Krishna consciousness is spread far and wide, we have an opportunity to take shelter of spiritual knowledge. And Prabhupada's delivered us the conclusion of how to get out of this material world in an extremely easy way, and a very easy to use user guide called the Bhagavad Gita and other related scriptures. Very, very simple process. What's happened is previous acharyas and goswamis have taken all of the knowledge, all of the Vedas in various ways, and presented it in such a way that will be applicable for us to practice in the age of Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada's taken that message, brought it to the West, and presented it to all the Westerners. Any creed, any color, any race, any sex, culture, it doesn't matter. This is knowledge for the soul. The soul is the same. Your soul, my soul, the soul of the ant, the soul of the plants, the soul of the demigods, they're the same consciousness, what we call Brahman. It's the same substance. These are parts and parcels of Krishna. Some of them have more powers and some of them have little powers. We can squash an ant with a foot, but then Gordon Brown can squash us with his MI5 or whoever needs to be. So there's always somebody we can squash and there's always somebody we can be squashed by. So, little bit of introspection knowledge, then we can understand actually we don't really belong here. This is a transient, temporary existence. So coming on to yoga then, what is yoga? We practice bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is the process of yoga by which we connect to Krishna directly through devotional processes. The processes of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, hearing Krishna's names, hearing about Krishna's pastimes, chanting Krishna's names, remembering Lord Krishna, and many other processes. These are all activities in our constitutional nature. It means that when we go back to heaven, or the spiritual world, whatever we want to call it, we will be doing the activities that we are doing now. But we will be doing them in pure ecstatic love, with pure love. So the process of yoga is purification. Yoga is not about stretching our bodies to get rid of our aches and pains in our old age, feeling it today particularly in the back and the shoulders, thinking I should do a bit of yoga. But that is not really yoga. It's just a side benefit, a side effect of yoga. But real yoga means connection with Krishna, connection with God. And why? Not because it's something new in this modern age that we should do. It's our constitution. We are constitutionally connected with God. Actually, we are not disconnected. Prabhupada said that we aren't disconnected from God. We are not disconnected from Krishna, even right here, right now. We have simply forgotten our connection. A yoga is about remembering that connection, restoring that connection. It's there. In a flash, we can have it if we do want it. So yoga means then to regulate our lives in such a way to start to minimize the bodily needs, and so we can increase the soul, the presence of the soul within us. The soul is here. We are the soul. But we have an illusion. We have this illusion that I am the body. This is our dilemma. So we're a prisoner inside that vehicle, machine. And what yoga is there for is to give us very, very specific. Difficult, not easy, but then nothing is easy. If we want money, we have to work hard for it. If we want a family, we have to work hard for them. If we want to look after a community, we have to work hard in doing that. If we want to pursue a hobby, everything requires effort and work. So similarly, to leave this material existence, to get spiritual bliss, to get our spiritual constitution, the perfect relationship that we're looking for, which is our relationship with God, requires some work, some efforts, a lot of efforts. So therefore, the first instruction of yoga, anywhere you go to yoga, if it's a genuine yoga, they will tell you you're not the body. Most yogas nowadays, they may say, yes, we're not the body, but then at the same time, they indulge in intoxication, they indulge in illicit sex and various other behavior that actually reinforces the bodily concept. When we experience physical pleasures, physical pain is a different thing, and mental pains, because they actually make us want to give up this body immediately. You know, you don't sit there thinking, oh, I'm really suffering today, I'm happy with it. You know, it's great to suffer. We want to get out. When we're experiencing happiness, some pleasure, then actually we start to become reinforced in in our cage. This food's nice, so we start to eat nice palatable foods and we think this is reality. We start to enjoy sexual connections with the opposite sex and we think this is reality. We start to watch the television. We do all of these things that just come through the eyes and through all the five senses. We experience these phenomena called sense objects, called gratification. Natural, because we're looking for pleasure. It's not that it's wrong, it's a natural thing to look for pleasure because this is the constitution of the soul. But the soul is looking for spiritual pleasure, and these objects that we experience are material. So material pleasures make us think the identity. Yes, my name is Jai Govinda, and I'm this, and I've got this much money, and I'm an IT consultant, and I have a family, and I drive this car. All those are false designations. They're not to be hung on to. So yoga is teaching us, moderate all of this, eat less, eat just what we need. We should eat to keep body and soul together. We sleep just so we can function normally. We work minimally so we can get whatever income we need to maintain ourselves. We don't live extravagantly. And this helps us release the cage, the prison, because we start then to see it as it is. If we indulge in it, makeup and all these things, I know for ladies it's a little different, you should have makeup because it's the nature of a woman to want makeup. But actually, if we understand who we are inside, then we can minimize these things and not try to get something from them. There is nothing wrong with material things, but when we try to get something, we squeeze something out of it, we try and get some pleasure, then it means that we're not looking to Krishna for that pleasure. And that's our natural constitution, is that Krishna's the one who gives pleasure. Because Krishna's Rishikesh, he's the master of the senses, which means even if we're in a terrible, dire situation, somehow or another we feel satisfied. When we have spiritual, for example, if we're hungry, but then we practice some chanting or something, even internally, just reflecting and meditating on Krishna's beauty, all of a sudden we forget our body, we forget our existence. So that proves that there's the consciousness inside is being fed, is being nurtured by that process. So we minimize the necessities. And there's four aspects of how to minimize what Lord Krishna is describing in here, how we should actually meditate. But we should do meditation every day. Whatever meditation it is, ideally it should be on the names of God, of Krishna. If we have other meditations, they should be give us peace. Ultimately, we're looking for that peace. So we can just calm everything down, a bit of shanti, shanti, from everything that's going on around us in our busy lives, because it is hectic, it's difficult. So we concentrate the mind. We Lord Krishna says that we fix our mind, stare steadily at the tip of our nose when we're doing some dhyana or meditation, because that fixes the mind in a particular point. If we close our eyes, sometimes we can go to sleep, some people don't. So once we can stare at a single point, this is a yoga, we can fix our mind. So sometimes, for example, there's various different practices, mindfulness and various things, where we can actually just close our eyes and just sit with our breathing for a few minutes. And all of a sudden, everything just calms down. You know, everything, all the madness, oh, my kids, this is chatter of the mind, is saying my money, oh God, I've got to go to this meeting, I've got to get home on time, oh, the train's really packed. Anywhere we are, it doesn't matter. You can drop everything and just go somewhere quiet, secluded, away from all of that, and just connect with yourself. And this is the process of self-realization. Because ultimately, where does the feelings that we get from all of these activities, where does it all end up? It ends up in a feeling in our hearts, inside ourselves. When we drink something that tastes nice, inside we feel satisfied. When we eat some food that feels good, we feel satisfied. When we have a relationship with somebody, where we've served somebody or made them feel happy about something, inside we feel satisfied. And this satisfaction is what we're ultimately looking for, this internal satisfaction. So this is the nature of the soul, constantly looking for that happiness, for that peace. So the peace we get by that meditation, we just sit and just be peaceful and be with ourselves. So staring at the tip of the nose, And then fearlessness. It says free from fear, devoid of fear, with an unedged fear constantly. We can sit down with ourselves for a minute and just be peaceful and quiet, but all of a sudden we fear. Oh, my boss, he's going to wonder where I am. Or, you know, my wife, she's going to get on my case because I'm going to be late. Or the kids are going to be upset, unhappy. I've got to look after the kids. I've got to do this. We've got to run around and do all these things. We do most of the stuff that we have to sometimes out of fear. Because if you just stop it, it doesn't matter. We don't realize how much we're subdued by fear. When Krishna's talking about sitting on a kusha grass, on a mat, he's also referring to yogis going to the jungle and sitting on a mat, because the mat repels various reptiles and insects, so it stops them coming up and biting while you're doing meditation. Tigers is a different thing altogether, but naturally when you're sitting there, and you might be thinking, especially in the jungle, you're thinking there's a tiger, could come and eat me at any time. Obviously we don't have that in London where we work, or from our offices. There's not going to be any tigers anytime soon, but the fear is the same thing, same principle. Oh, I've got to earn this much money. Oh God, I've got to do this much. I've got to have this meeting. I've got to. It's fear based. So we should subdue that fear, because Krishna will look after all that. He's doing everything anyway. And then free from sex life is another aspect. Again, something that agitates our mind, very much so, because this is the root, the highest pleasure in the material world is that sex life. So free from those feelings. Then when we have that meditation, so we concentrate our mind, we become fearless, we don't worry about being pulled in different directions. We're free from agitated mind of sex life. So therefore celibacy is required to give us the determination to be able to sit in our meditation. And then Krishna says, one should meditate upon me with a heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. So as I was saying, we come to the temple, we see the deity, and we take darshan and we pray. But that Lord is within our hearts. He's there. And we can feel him and we can hear him. The soul and the Lord Krishna within our hearts, they are eternally connected. Eternally connected. We've just forgotten the connection. So once we start to do that, and we do that meditation, we do that regularly, chanting Krishna's names, whatever it is, and start to meditate within, then we will start to feel very different. And we will start to realize there's a different source of pleasure. There's a very different source of pleasure to what we're experiencing today. And that pleasure is Brahman, is Krishna, is the transcendental realm. It's this energy of the soul. And that world is a different world. It's completely opposite to this. In this world, there's misery. In the spiritual, in our constitution as spirit, there is pure bliss. There is never misery. In this world, things come to an end. Whatever we're doing will come to an end. It gives us pleasure. It may be whatever. Chapatis we eat, chapatis and sabji we eat. Nice, my favorite sabji. I love roti and everything. So we have that. And then it runs out, or we become full up. So we have to come to the end of that pleasure. And then sometimes we eat so much sabji and roti that actually we feel sick. And then we don't want to eat that sabji and roti. So everything has to come to an end. Pleasure is like that. So everything comes to an end. There's misery in this world. And we're ignorant. We forget. Sometimes we might get an amazing revelation about something, and then the next day we forget it. It carried us for a while. So we're not what we call cognizance. We don't have that awareness, and therefore we get cheated sometimes, or we mistreat somebody, or, you know, we have imperfect knowledge. So in the spiritual world, we're completely cognizant about everything, about our fully identity, the identity of our relationship with God, everything. That cognizance is there. So in the spiritual world, it's topsy-turvy. Everything we don't, that's struggling up here, in the spiritual world, we don't have that struggle. So what we're looking for is that pleasure, but we're looking in the wrong place. We're just looking in the material dimension for the spiritual pleasure. So Krishna is saying then we should not eat too much and we should not eat too little. We should not sleep too much and we should not sleep too little. We shouldn't work too much and we shouldn't work too little. It's easy to work too much. For myself, I find it work too little is easier, actually, you know, lazy. But if you overwork, sometimes, you know, we become very addicted, workaholics. So we shouldn't work too much or too little. We shouldn't have too little recreation, too much recreation. If we have too much recreation, then we just get carried away with frivolity and frivolous games and just chill out, you know. if we don't relax enough, then we don't have that time for ourselves and just down tools and not worry about everything. So Krishna's giving us instructions how we should perform our yoga in that way. This is moderation. Again, this is aspects. If we eat too much, we become diseased. We become overweight, obese. And that reinforces our conception with the body because that carries a lot of suffering with it as well. So we have to be careful. We have to look at our body as a temple. We look after it. So Krishna gives us these instructions for moderation. When we start to practice this moderation, we start to get a sense that we are somebody different. If we are fully absorbed in the body, then we, even actually too much suffering and too much misery, we can't actually take the time to contemplate that I'm somebody different from the body, that I'm the consciousness, the chetan inside that, you know, that's me, that's actually the source of happiness and the source of everything. So that moderation will give us that spiritual. Now, why should we come to that platform of Brahman then? So we do our yoga, Krishna's instructions, there's much more to it. Sometimes it's difficult. Actually, once we start to control our senses and start to moderate, even reduce our sleep a little, reduce our eating, our mind will kick back. Because our mind at the moment has got control over everything. Our mind is reigning over us and we don't realize it. It's got full reign control over. And once we start to push back on the mind a little bit, it's like the mind turns around and says, what are you doing? I'm in control. I'm the controller here, you know? So then you start to have an inner conflict. And that is what yoga, the path of yoga is about, tolerating and resolving that conflict. Your mind is kicking back, so you start to work out ways how you can surpass your mind. Krishna will help us. When we do practice the Krishna consciousness, Krishna helps us overcome the mind. But the mind is the key. Because Krishna says here, Bandur atatmanasthasya yenatmaivatmanajita anatmanashtu shatruvevartatmaivashatruvat, that one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. And for one who has failed to do so, to conquer the mind is the worst enemy. Such things, basic things, even everybody's trying to do it in some capacity, have some discipline over their lives, time management, you know, control their amount of time, how much they do this, and trying to, and all of a sudden, you have a nice time management, and we have all these ideas, a really good to-do list, and a calendar, and we've organized our day, and something comes in, turns it up, or our mind just refuses to cooperate. So controlling the mind is very difficult, and discipline is extremely, very difficult, especially if we're not disciplined from a young age. And it's more tricky. We fight it and then Krishna helps us. Then Krishna says that for one who has controlled the mind, the super soul, the Paramatma, Krishna in the heart, he's already reached. So this is the key to the success of yoga. That if our mind is controlled, then the Lord in the heart is reached. That means, what does this mean? It means we've reached the level of Brahman. And what is the level of Brahman? Everything in the world is duality. Happiness and distress. Good and bad, dark and light, hunger and having overeaten, so many things. Everything has an opposite. So if you take your hand and you've got the front of your hand and the back of your hand, you can never look at the back. You can never look at them both at the same time. You can look at the edge, but you can't see one or the other. Once you turn it, then you see one side of the hand, not the other side. But in order to have... You have to have the back and the front of something. You need the front of the hand, you need the back. You can't have one without the other. So the same way with duality, you can't have happiness without distress. You can't have, in the absence of light, there is darkness. The absence of happiness means distress. The absence of heat means cold. So duality is a material concept. But they are flip sides of the same thing. What we've done is we've come into this material world and our mind has told us that happiness is better than is good, sadness is bad. Heat is nice for some, cold is not good. If we go to India, heat can be terrible. We want cold, and if we're in the UK and it's cold, we want to have hot. So depending on our circumstance, our mind is accepting or rejecting one or the other thing. This is called duality. This is the nature of material existence. What happens if you bring together heat and cold? It becomes neutralized. Or if you bring together light and dark, actually you can't really bring those two together. But that point of bringing together is called equilibrium. and equilibrium means that there is no existence of duality within that state, then this is Brahman. Neither we are happy, neither we are sad. Neither we are hot, neither we are cold. Neither we are in pain, neither we are having pleasure. So that is Brahman. So then you think, well, that sounds like voidness or nothingness. But it's not. It's the platform where which we have a relationship with God in a pure ecstatic form. The happiness we experience in this world is a little bit of a reflection of what we can experience with spiritual happiness. But it's not everything. It's just a reflection. Once we start to connect our soul with God, with Krishna, through a process of bhakti yoga, so coming back to that moderation, we moderate ourselves to bring the soul and let the soul flourish and bring our real consciousness out. Once that starts to happen, we start to experience the ecstasy of the soul in relationship to God. And that ecstasy is something that you can't define what that pleasure means. There's no way you can materially analyze it because it's not coming from matter. It's not coming from the duality of pain and pleasure. So in that ecstasy, what does that mean? So what does that look like? The eternal beauty of the spiritual world. The goal of all yoga is to go back to that spiritual world and have that spiritual relationship with God, with Krishna, in some capacity. We may be a lover, we may be a mother or father, we may be a friend, we may be a servant, we may be an inanimate or so seemingly inanimate object like a blade of grass or a flute, anything. We are instrumental to Krishna's pleasure. That is the perfection of our life. It's very difficult to conceive because we think immediately, as soon as we say we're instruments of Krishna, we're for Krishna's pleasure, then we think, okay, mind starts to calculate, you know, think, okay, that means I might get exploited. Because when we become an instrument to somebody in this world, we usually get exploited. They usually want something out of it. Maybe we submit ourselves to somebody, and then they take advantage. They may take our money, or they take our time, or they just emotionally dump on us, or something like that. So we start to develop a hardened attitude towards service, towards other people, because we've actually done it in the wrong way. Becoming instrumental for others, it's a misconception. We've done it in a slightly different way. With God, He will never exploit us, because Krishna, the energy, the beauty of Krishna, it's all good. Krishna is all loving. Krishna does not exploit. Krishna does not... The nature of relationship between the soul and Krishna is the servant and the served, the servant and the master. But that is our constitution. It's actually, when we experience pleasure, that is a reflection of the pleasure of the relationship of the soul with God in its serving and enjoying mood or original position. So there's no question of Krishna exploiting us. We should have faith that Krishna won't exploit us. We belong there. And once we pray to Krishna, we come here and we pray to Krishna, we take his prasadam, and we're already surrendering to Krishna to a degree. We just have to take that more, another step. Another step and just say, Krishna, what more can I do for you? How can I become more of a servant? Because as we become more of a servant, we enjoy more. In the material world, when somebody becomes more of a servant, they become exploited more. But in the spiritual world, everything is reverse. So whatever we experience in this world, we can understand that it's just switched on its head in the spiritual world. And there's no bad, that spiritual world. So Srila Prabhupada describes the beauty of the spiritual world. That what is the beauty of the spiritual world? What do the people look like? What do I do there in the spiritual world? What does Krishna look like? So Srila Prabhupada explains, I'll read something small from a purport. He says, as spiritual sparks of the beams emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord, we are all permanently related with Him and equal to Him in quality. The material energy is a covering of the spiritual spark, but in the absence of that material covering, the living beings of Vaikuntha Loka are never forgetful of their identities. Vaikuntha Loka is the spiritual planets where we belong, where we've came from. They are eternally cognizant of their relationship with God in their constitutional position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. The residents of Vaikuntha have brilliantly black complexions, much more fascinating and attractive than the dull white and black complexions found in the material world. Their bodies, being spiritual, have no equals in the material world. The body of a bright cloud, when lightning flashes on it, merely hints at their beauty. Generally, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha dress in yellow clothing. Their bodies are delicate and attractively built, and their eyes are like the petals of lotus flowers. What are our eyes like in this world, you know? Our eyes are like something else, you know? And if you turn up to work in dressed in yellow clothing, you'd probably be thinking, what on earth you look like? You're sticking out like a sore thumb. Put your suit and tie on. Like Lord Vishnu, the residents of Vaikuntha have four hands decorated with a conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. Their chests are beautifully broad and fully decorated with necklaces of a brilliant diamond-like metal surrounded by costly jewels never to be found in the material world. The residents of Vaikuntha are always powerful and effulgent. Some of them have complexions like red coral cat's eyes and lotus flowers, and each of them has earrings of costly jewels. On their heads they wear flowery crowns resembling garlands. You know, if you dress up like that, step into your office or come home dressed like that, you think you've gone completely nuts, you know? But this is beauty, actually. Flowers are beautiful. Silk, beautiful clothes, jewels. All of these things are actually, in the material world, they're considered very, very beautiful and opulent. In the spiritual world, this is our natural attire, because everything in the spiritual world is beautiful. And so, as far as they're traveling around, it says, in the Vaikunthas, there are airplanes in the spiritual world, but they make no tumultuous sounds. Material airplanes are not at all safe. They can fall down and crash at any time, for matter is imperfect in every respect. In the spiritual sky, however, the airplanes are also spiritual, and they are spiritually brilliant and bright. These airplanes do not fly business executives, politicians, or planning commissions as passengers, nor do they carry cargo or postal bags, for these are all unknown there. Probably a lot of our jobs seem like they're completely irrelevant. They don't exist in this, but there's no computers, there's no post, there's no telegrams, you know, there's no business that goes on there. Why it's no business? Because business is just material, you know. Everything's there is for pleasure and leisure. These planes are for pleasure trips only, and the residents of Vaikuntha fly in them with their heavenly, beautiful, fairy-like consorts. Therefore, these airplanes full of residents of Vaikuntha, both male and female, increase the beauty of the spiritual sky. We cannot imagine how beautiful they are, but their beauty may be compared to the clouds in the sky, accompanied by silver branches of electric lightning. The spiritual sky of Vaikuntha Loka is always decorated in this way. So, it's inconceivable, but everything is a festival in the spiritual world. Actually, everything is blissful. So if we take the happiness that we experience in this world, take the highest happiness that we experience in this world, it is a glint, a little tiny reflection of that pleasure in the spiritual world. If we take a little beauty of this material world, like we can look out in nature and see the sun shining, the beautiful clouds, the sky, the trees, the flowers, all this beauty, rivers, you take just that beauty is just a, Krishna says, is a spark of my splendor. In the spiritual world, it is unlimitedly incomparable to what we see now, but we can get an idea that that happiness exists. So we paint a nice picture for what that is, but that's for ultimately where we are from. It's where we belong. You come here to the temple, you pray to Krishna, we get a glimpse of that. We get an inkling of what is Krishna, who how beautiful he is. We dress Krishna in flowers, costly jewelry, beautiful clothes. Krishna is elaborate. Everything about Krishna is very beautiful, and everything about the soul is very beautiful. So yoga means bringing the beauty out in ourself, minimizing that material, because material is dead matter. It's irrelevant. What gives somebody beauty, what gives someone attraction, is not how they look. Maybe that catches our eye initially, but there's something, the soul is ultimately the attractive point. So we see Krishna, start to see Krishna through the soul. We start to see Krishna in the hearts of other people. Whoever we interact with, we see Krishna within those people. Krishna is helping us. Krishna is giving us happiness, and Krishna is giving us distress. And this is his love. And that's what yoga means. Yoga means being ultimately fully conscious of that love that Krishna is giving to us. He is helping us. This process of yoga is to perfect our consciousness, is to bring about that full realization of what is our relationship with God, and how should I serve him, and what is my constitution. Now, just to finish off, by moderation, we have to eat. So Krishna says you take prasadam, you offer food to Krishna, and then you take his remnants. When Krishna glances over anything, it becomes auspicious, it becomes spiritualized. So we take it ourselves. we become spiritually nourished, and we give it to other people, they become spiritually nourished. So that controls our tongue. It controls our eating process, taking the prasadam. We take the holy name, Krishna's names. Again, it controls our tongue. It controls our speech. When our tongue is controlled, that is the key sense to controlling all the other senses. So if we just take Krishna's prasadam and we chant Krishna's names, the more we do this, the more we will relish that and we will stop any mundane things. Our service is our work, so that's our physical execution of works. We do that. Whatever that work may be, we offer the result to Krishna. And we should constantly remain immersed in hearing the glories of the Lord. We can read the newspaper, and fine, we need to do those things out of necessity, just for basics. But if we analyze our needs, look at a cat or a dog. It walks around naked, and it just gets its food from wherever, and it gets food somehow or another. In one sense, we have to have that degree of surrender and confidence. If nature is providing the animals, nature will provide the humans. So we don't need much, actually, to survive if we really look at it. And if we're willing to live like that, then we will become recipients for spiritual mercy, because we will realize there's something much deeper than the material, everyday material things. We won't be interested in newspaper, television, all these things. We start to fill our minds with spiritual literatures and spiritual topics. And then the bliss of the soul will come much, very, very powerfully, like we've never experienced. And the more we do that, the more that bliss will come. And we will become perfect in our yoga practice. So, thank you very much, everybody.